Okay, let's have some volume. Yeah? Hey, can you hear me? Hey, well, yes, I've written a new book. It's called The Seventh Day. It's a science fiction thriller. So think Highlander meets Angels and Demons. Yes? What can I say? First of all, everybody enjoying TechEd so far, yes? Yes. Sorry, I can't hear you. Is somebody out there? Yeah, you all must be Swedish or something. Okay, so I think we're just on time. So first of all, a very good afternoon. Welcome to Hacking Beyond Borders Mobile Device in Security. My name is Andy Malone. I'm an MVP and also a Microsoft certified trainer from the UK. 20 years as a trainer, God forbid, 8 years as an MVP, and 8 years as a speaker now at TechEd. So that's pretty good, eh? And this is the last TechEd. This will be the last TechEd ever, okay? And I want you to know I'm a very, very sincere person. So I really, really appreciate you all coming along to Barcelona, okay? So the other thing is, as I said, yes, I have written a new book. I can't be doing with techie books, although I've written chapters in techie books before, and they're very kind of dull. So this is The Seventh Day. As I say, a science fiction thriller. You can download it. You can, whatever you want, is available in paperback and so on. And one lucky person in this room right now is going to win this because there is a golden ticket. So if you check under your chairs, you will discover one of these. If you can find one of these, then you have won this book. No? You got it? Come and get it. Yes, if you've got it. Give the man a hand. Yes, give him a round of applause. Well done. Okay. I'll sign it for €12. Okay. Okay, so first of all, thank you very much. Welcome along. Who was at my session last year or the year before? Or who comes along to my sessions? Okay, thank you. You're my posse. Wonderful. So today's session is all about mobile device insecurity. And I'm not really focusing on a specific device or a specific security flaw or what have you. I wanted to take the whole industry. I think this is a conversation that we have needed to talk about for quite some time. So this is basically the outline that we're going to talk about. And so first of all, I want to get through some kind of misconceptions about mobile device security. First one, mobile devices are protected from viruses and spyware. Okay, they're automatically protected. Absolute rubbish. They're just as vulnerable as your regular PC. Okay, they have an operating system. They are potentially open to the same kind of flaws as that operating system. One vendor, this is a big misconception, my friends. One vendor is more secure than another vendor. Okay? And I want to specifically say this at TechEd. Yes? So all devices, don't be complacent. Don't get cocky and think, oh, my device, just because I'm running this OS, it's going to be more secure than yours. That's stupidity. Apps from the official app store have been thoroughly tested and are totally secure. Do you think they test every single app in the app store? Yes? No? Of course they don't. There are millions of apps out there. Well, for some platforms there are. Mobile phones ensure my privacy. Do you believe that? Okay, I'll take your silence either as, no, that's not right, or you're humming a song, Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel. No, I don't want to upgrade to iTunes, thank you. Okay, most users are brand loyal and will always stick to one vendor. Do you think that's true? Who has always stuck to one vendor? Raise your hand. Ooh, wow, nobody. Well, you're absolutely right. So, and what are the current threats? Well, the thing is, it doesn't really matter what OS that you're on. So whether you're on a Windows phone, whether you're on an Android, an Apple device, it really doesn't matter. And this is what this session is about. Because now it's about the data. It's about how we consume the data. Because we don't consume, you don't just say, oh, I'm just using Windows. I don't use an Apple Mac. Everybody uses different systems, but we're all consuming the same data. So that means that the data that we consume has to be secure. And the more that we move towards the cloud, I think this will ultimately change. So I was just having a conversation. You know, we talk about antivirus, anti-malware. We talk about firewalls. I believe at the moment, there's a whole middleware of industry. And as we move towards the cloud, so we're just connecting directly to the cloud, this whole middleware, I believe, will eventually go away. I think the world is changing, and the way that the industry is changing as well. So we look at the total or the global sales for smartphones for 2013. This is the last quarter for 2013. And, you know, you can't ignore Android. Android has sold over 250 million units in a single year. And you can see that Windows and some of the other operating systems. But this is just why you can't rely on a single vendor. So if you look at the yellow, of course, the yellow and that was probably BlackBerry. It was probably Symbian. Remember the Symbian OS? That's just showing you that over a very short time period, there's a trend. You go with the trend. So it's irrelevant about the actual operating system itself. What we're really focusing on is protecting the data, protecting the user. And to do that, we need to appreciate what are some of the mobile threats out there, the actual threat landscape. So first of all, the number one threat, of course, is that your phone is always on. Generally, it's always on, which means it's generally available, it's generally transmitting. And because smartphones are more sophisticated than your regular phones, they often can contain vast amounts of not just personal, but also corporate data as well. So potentially making those devices more vulnerable. So when we talk about the growing threat landscape, we're really talking about things like corporate threats as well. So obviously, last year I spoke about things like corporate espionage within a company. So it's no longer the case that I need to go in and steal your laptop or steal your PC or inject it with a thumb drive and steal data like that. All I need to do now, in many cases, is just either get hold of your phone or get the data from your phone. Also, many phones, for example, Samsung and so on, they have the capabilities to have SD cards, so removable storage, so you can expand the storage. And in many cases, people don't encrypt that, which makes it potentially vulnerable, certainly if they're corporate-type phones. What about data leakage as well? So, of course, data leakage isn't just, you know, putting out inappropriate content, posting inappropriate messages, but it's also making inappropriate use of maybe corporate information. And of course, then this theft as well. So if somebody either steals your device or basically logs in as you and steals your data. And we can easily do that nowadays. And you might argue with me, oh, well, nobody can get access to my phone. But you back up your phone, don't you? And what do you back up your phone? You use probably a central, for example, if you use Microsoft, you probably use a standard Microsoft account. So yes, you've got a cloud backup. You've got a PC backup. I don't need access to your phone to get your backup. What about government snooping as well? We're all concerned about government snooping, irrelevant of where you live in the world. And the thing about this is it's extremely easy to do. The technology out there is really quite simple, and it's very, very inexpensive. And also malicious code. So not just malicious websites, you know, drive-by type attacks, but also app stores that are offering, for example, torches, free torches that seem to want full access to your phone. So why would a phone need access to your email, to your contacts? Why would the Torch app need access to things like that? So in some operating systems, it's not quite clear what they're asking permission for, but with some other operating systems, it actually is. So what are some of the attack techniques then that some of the kind of bad guys are actually using out there? Well, as I've said, malicious apps. These are by far one of the fastest growing areas, and they're happening in every app store. Not just Android, not just Microsoft and Apple, but every app store as well. And also because people want free stuff, right? I know I'm Scottish, so I want free stuff. I never pay for stuff, okay? So, you know, we all want free stuff. And when we want free stuff, we're tempted to go and just say, yeah, I'll take that one for free, or I'll download a dodgy app. And of course, you don't know, you know, you pay your money, you take your chance. What about a direct attack? So whether it's a phishing email, whether it's a phishing attack, whether somebody's physically got access to your device as well. And of course, physical compromise is the big thing. So if somebody can actually get physical access to your phone, then basically it's game over, potentially. What about data communication interceptions? Well, this is probably one of the most sinister areas of this type of attack. So this tends to be government people. Again, you would need legal reasons to intercept somebody's communications. Well, depending on where you are in the world, of course. What about authentication? To be honest, this is probably the weakest and the strongest area that you can protect your phone. So at the moment, we typically, or most users typically, put in a four-digit PIN. By far, this is the easiest and the simplest way to attack. But if we try and make that a little bit more complex, which the processes are now taking place, for example, Windows 10, as you maybe saw this morning, Windows 10 is making great inroads in that area, not just for phones, but also portable devices as well. Things like multi-factor authentication. And then, obviously, exploitation and misconduct, not just from employees, but from people that you work with and so on. So gross misconduct, stealing information from people's phones and so on. So these are some of the kind of the known kind of attack techniques. So I suppose we have to talk about Android, because Android's had a bad press. It says, I think the statistic is something like 97% of malware is on an Android device. To be fair, that's because 90% of people use an Android device. The same thing was said about Windows a few years ago. Windows was the most attacked operating system. Of course it was. It was because it was the most widely used OS. Okay, it's not because it's Android, it's because it's free, and again, people don't want to pay for stuff. And also, it's an open source platform. So perhaps, you know, Microsoft is definitely an organization that embraces open source, and they're now writing apps for Android. So, you know, you can't stick your head in the sand with this anymore. But we're definitely seeing a rise of really quite disturbing types of apps in app stores. So this one, of course, is like an email, a text bomber. And this is, I found this only a few days ago. And there's loads of them. By the way, I wanted to demo this, some of these apps, but for legal reasons that I was frowned upon. So I'm sure you can appreciate it. Of course, this is it. Jailbreak me. Everybody wants to jailbreak their phone. Nobody wants to be tied into a particular vendor or a particular contract. And to be fair, quite a number of vendors are actually opening up now and saying, okay, you can now use the various app stores. But just beware, if you jailbreak a phone, then you are potentially at the mercy of the bad guy. Okay, so what happens then if you are infected with malware? What are the telltale signs? Well, often it's very, very difficult to determine. So really on a PC, It's really quite easy to determine. And I'm sure if you've seen Mark Racinovich's session, he does a great talk on using some of his sysinternals tools. But of course, you can't use sysinternals tools on a mobile device. So that tends to be a little bit more difficult to determine. But one thing that you will definitely notice is a decrease in performance. So the slow operation and decreased function. So if you're thinking that, oh, it's just me, my phone is just weird, it might not be. It actually might have some kind of malware attack on it. Excuse me. Random action. So the phone powers on by itself. The camera comes on by itself. Applications open up on their own. Items are downloaded without permission. I've seen these things. I've seen these things on users' phones. So just be a little bit aware of it. You know, if you and often we're so, you know, most users tend to have a set of apps. What we're actually finding now is that the scale of downloads for apps is actually slowing. So we tend to have the same amount of apps for quite some time. So it's actually easier to notice if rogue apps mysteriously appear. And this is probably a very concerning one. The phone log shows calls that you didn't make. In most cases, though, if it is a malware attack, one of the first things it will do is it will clean up logs. So this tends to be probably the one I wouldn't agree with. Emails are sent to addresses that you don't recognize. Okay, so again, good tips, good advice. Just watch out for this stuff. And again, the report there says 97% of mobile malware is on the Android, which is probably absolutely true. Okay, to be fair, Google are doing a fair bit to clean that up, as is Microsoft, as is Apple. So tomorrow or on Thursday, I'm going to be doing my Tor talk. And I was going to show you some malware from really dark places, but I'll save that for Thursday. But in the meantime, these are just some simple websites that I found offering some very interesting tools. So this particular one here, again, you'll be able to see this on the video available afterwards. You can see there's a whole list of, I was tempted to say really good hacking tools then, but I wouldn't do that. InfoSec Institute, again, this is a good website. It shows you, you know, some of the apps that are out there. You've heard of Metasploit, of course. Desploit is probably the latest of their platforms. Desploit is actually a really nice set of tools. Of course, it's for vulnerability testing, of course. I would never use it on a user's phone. Things like network spoofers, network discovery, Shark for root, getting root access to a phone. That's often very, very powerful way of injecting malware. And of course, phones, what do phones use? They use IP like any other system. And of course, they can also be harvested for botnet use as well. Again, just to show you, download.com, so the GOAT simulator, be careful with that one, by the way. There are some, it doesn't download a goat, by the way. So there are some, again, third-party app stores here, which, again, you should watch out for. Sites like this, Android Freeware, not all legitimate, and also they allow you to download to a PC, and then you can then upload. So just watch out for that one. Alternative 2, so what are the alternate app stores that I can use? So this is quite an interesting site, so it takes you through all the different or known app stores. And of course, you've got alternate Windows sites as well. So it's not just Android, this is also Windows as well. And just to prove it, there is a website for hacked Windows apps here as well. Okay, again, some of these have known malware and have viruses in them. So just watch out for those. By the way, on my slides, there's notes on my slides. So I've put all the websites and more. So that's just a sample of some of the things that I found, by the way. An interesting development, though, in smartphone technology is NFC, near-field communications. And near-field communication technology has just exploded. So, of course, Wi-Fi, what did we do on Wi-Fi? You'll see Hussein walking around TechEd this week, Marcus's buddy, you know, trying to snoop on Wi-Fi signals. Yes, that's great. Then you might have Bluetooth, trying to hijack Bluetooth transmissions. But, of course, the latest trend is actually hacking or getting access to near-field communications, because this is really interesting. Now, you might argue, oh, yeah, Andy, that's fair enough, but you've got to be real close, right? But you've got to touch the pad. Actually, it can be up to 10 meters away if you've got the right equipment. So if you've got the right equipment, you could actually sniff NFC traffic up to 10 meters away. And a lot of the stuff is available, you know, on certain websites, certain Chinese websites, which I won't mention. So most mobile phones now are NFC compliant. So you can now pay bills through your mobile phone. So NFC as a technology is not the most secure. It doesn't transmit in the most secure way, which potentially means it could potentially be hijacked. What is secure, though, is potentially the apps that use it. So you can use secure apps which secure the channel. Again, when we talk about the actual attack methods, what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about a potential man-in-the-middle attack, of course. So, you know, you're going through that payment gateway with your credit card, you know, the ones that you touch. If I can obviously hijack that reader and steal that information, or if you touch your phone and I can maybe steal your data from your phone. As I said, it offers no protection by default against eavesdropping. Okay, so it potentially is vulnerable to that. But if you want to protect your applications, so for example, banking applications, then they would use things like SSL, okay, secure sockets. So you need to have some kind of data in transit mechanism here. Also, RF signals can be picked up with antennas. It's a radio wave. So whether it's Wi-Fi, whether it's Bluetooth, whether it's NFC, it's still a radio wave, and it can be picked up and potentially eavesdropped. So between 1 to 10 meters. There is actually a website out there, dealextreme.com, and you can potentially go in there and you can pick up NFC cracking content for that. So as I say, just watch out for that. Incidentally, by the way, what I'm going to do is I've done a little bit of research in this area. I've got a few white papers. I've got some presentations, some demos and things. I'm going to share a OneDrive this week from TechEd with all my demos and everything. I'll post it on my Twitter page, at Andy Malone, okay? So I will put the link up there for you. So, attack methods, as I said, relay attack, data corruption, spoofing, man in the middle, NFC protocol stack fuzzing, and also the Android NFC stack bug that has now been patched with the latest version of Android. So that's NFC attacks. What about Bluetooth attacks? Well, you know, this is nothing new. This has actually been happening for quite some time. So one of these, of course, is bluejacking. So, you know, if I wanted to send unsolicited messages, either for fun or malicious use, you might use this type of attack. Blue snarfing, so the theft of actually information. And Bluetooth is now really in, you know, a lot of people leave the devices switched on by default, especially with the use of things like Bluetooth speakers, Bluetooth headphones and headsets. Another one is blue bugging. So this is probably the most serious one. So this is where the attacker can actually take control of your device. And Bluetooth spy software is everywhere. Okay, so you can purchase this everywhere. In the UK, we have there's a store called spyshop.co.uk. They sell all that kind of stuff, but you can buy it everywhere. This is interesting. Have you seen these? You know, where you can, let's say you're in an airport, you're running out of juice for your phone. It's okay, though. You can put it on a pad and it will automatically regenerate it. Indeed. Well, just watch out for these, okay? There have been a number of attacks, certainly on these types of devices. Never trust these public areas. So just watch out for that. This is the phone spy tool. So this is just an example of the websites that I found. There is, I've put in a whole bunch of links here as well. And it's probably worth going and having a look at these, playing with the tools, downloading them. Many of you might be IT pros. Many of you might be used to actually just dealing with PCs or laptops or operating system type of security. But now, because we're managing data remotely, we need to be able to access that data and also secure that data on any device. And this is why we need to be familiar with these types of tools. As I mentioned, hacking apps. There are a whole amount of hacking apps out there. And these are just some of them that I found. Certainly probably one of the largest areas, though, of certainly malicious software seems to be with the free utilities. So things like free torches and free games and things like that. The nice things I like about Android, that it actually shows you, it asks you what permissions that you're going to give the app, whereas some of the other OSs don't do that. But of course, you might want spyware on your phone. You might want to monitor your kids. Can we just have the sound up, please, on a video? Here's a little, this is a US advert. This is a real product, by the way.
Recent statistics about teens' behavior show disturbing facts. 6,000 children under the age of 18 start smoking every day. 80% of high school seniors have used alcohol, and 62% have been drunk. 20% of them are skipping school. 8 out of 10 teens are lying to their parents about something. 15% of teens have sent and received sexually suggestive images. Stop wondering whether your son or daughter is included in these statistics. Now, each parent is able to learn the truth and protect your kids from harmful behaviors. How? By installing the Mobile Monitor application on their kid's phone. Mobile Monitor satisfies all of your needs as a parent. It's the perfect cell phone tracking application to monitor your child's behavior and do it in total secrecy. Find out whom they're talking with. Learn whom they're texting with and what about, meeting at the bar and skipping school. Know where they are at any time, at school or somewhere else. Monitor all images, video, and audio files for any inappropriate content, violence, or sexuality. Check web pages visited by your teen's phone and more. With the Mobile Monitor application, you'll be one step ahead and learn everything that your teen is hiding from you.
Yes, you'll never have any kids left, of course, because they will never trust you after that. But the thing is, what they're basically talking about there is, hey, let's legitimately hack our phones. It might not be your teen. You might suspect that your partner's having an affair. So where does it end? Now, that company actually produces, there's two sides to that company. They produce a product for parents, but they also produce a law enforcement version of that particular application. So the next thing then is, I call it Attack of the Clones. Has anybody heard of a product called SimMax? SimMax. No? Okay, SimMax is it's a little USB device. And they provide you with a read-write SIM card. And that read-write SIM card can hold up to 16 ordinary SIMs. And the idea is that you can just basically clone a SIM card. And it takes about 30 seconds to clone a SIM card, all for the price of £1, okay, from a Chinese website. All for the price of a pound. So we have our target phone here, so a corporate phone. All I need to do is get access to your phone. I basically have a look at your SIM card, take your SIM card, mini or the large one, and I use the cloning tool. So I'm calling it SimMax. It takes a snapshot of that card, Okay, and I put that back. So basically, when your phone rings, my phone rings. When you get an email, I get an email. When you get a text, I get a text. All for the price of $1. Okay, that's pretty good, isn't it? Okay. You can also go further. So if you're really sinister, well, I'm not saying you are sinister, although some of you do look sinister. If you want to take your skills to the next level, there are some serious phone spy tools that you can get out there. Okay, so things like video camcorder, video camera detectors, again, juice hackers. So you buy there's not just the portable juice stations, but you can actually buy the actual devices themselves. Probably one of the most sinister technologies, I think, is the ISMI, or International Mobile Subscriber Identity Catcher. So this is kind of like a Wi-Fi catcher. And essentially what we're looking for, though, once we have this information, we can then find out exactly who you are. It's like tuning into a specific radio frequency, if you will. So it can catch all the user's information, including the content of messages, voice calls, everything. Now, the crazy thing about this technology is it's quite an old technology, this. And you can actually build your own for about $20 to $25, just the various components. Of course, it's highly illegal that you do that, so that's the reason why I'm not demoing one. I actually have one of these devices. So essentially what it does, it gathers information from phones and then essentially tricks. So the signal that it sends out basically makes your mobile phone think that it's connecting to a mobile phone pylon. So, and of course, it will just make that connection, register itself on that network, and then I can just basically siphon off the data. And the great thing about these is you can essentially set them up everywhere. They're available everywhere. The other thing I would say is you can also use it within a targeted radius as well. So this is, you know, you might have seen the movies Zero Dark Thirty. You know, the one where they're trying to hunt down Osama bin Laden. So you basically set up one of these devices and it essentially captures all the traffic within the radius of your current location. So this potentially could be hundreds of phone numbers. And of course, state-sponsored spyware doesn't just stop there either. Of course, Mr. Snowden changed the world. And of course, we're all now more conscious and more aware of potential spying and its implications. So this is probably one of the most famous suppliers of government state-sponsored spyware. Have a look at this. Volume, please. So this is FinSpy Mobile. And the idea of this is state-sponsored malware. So essentially, the law enforcement have the legal jurisdiction to drop a piece of malware on your phone. Now, the example here, it shows that it's a BlackBerry, but this works with Windows, it works with Android, it works with any kind of mobile phone system. So essentially, it just looks like it's coming from an official update. Okay, you would not know the difference. So you accept the update, the malware goes in your phone, and essentially, the bad guy or the law enforcement officer can then monitor everything that you do. Okay. And collect evidence about you. So, some pretty scary technology out there. I mean, if you wanted to hack somebody, I'm sure you could probably do that. So what are some of the things that you can do in order to protect yourself? So let's talk about mobile authentication solutions. So when we talk about access control, of course, we're talking about authentication and authorization. So authentication means how are you going to be authenticated on the network or on that particular device? Are you going to use a PIN code? Are you going to use a smart card? Are you going to use retina scan, something like that? Of course, the problem at the moment is that mobile technology, many people still use that four-digit number. That is now starting to change. So there is definitely a strong requirement for access controls. Now, we've seen it in the corporate world. I'll talk about technologies like, SCCM, Windows, Intune, and things like that later. So very much now vendors are starting to say, hey, we need to be able to manage all these devices, not just one particular brand, because we have to protect our data. So authentication and authorization. So authentication solutions, of course, it's something that you know. So this can be a password, it can be a passphrase, it can be an unlock pattern, it can be something that you have, whether you've got a smart card, some kind of token device, or whether it's something that you are, a fingerprint, a retina scan. Preferably, both of these would be really nice. So the first of those is PIN access, of course. And PIN access has been around now for well over 15 years. It's old, it's tired, it needs to be fixed. Okay, so this is definitely the weakest form of authentication. Smart cards, tokens, obviously more expensive because you need to actually distribute this and you need to have some kind of infrastructure in place to be able to do this. And it doesn't also work well in all applications. So it's not kind of in the mainstream or people don't want to spend the extra cash. What is coming around, though, is biometrics. And biometrics, just to give you an idea, for example, Android, Windows phones, Apple phones. You've now got fingerprint scanners on the Android phones. You've got facial recognition. But you can also add in additional things, like you've got to blink, so it can't be a photo. And it's got to be a 3D representation of a face, not a static photo. So again, biometrics is coming along a long way. So it provides strong authentication when it works, but of course it does provide quite a few false positives as well. And also it doesn't work with all applications, but it's getting there. The technology is getting better. Another thing that Android introduced was the pattern lock technology. But again, one of the problems with pattern lock technologies is that there is, out of this kind of nine-digit grid here, there are exactly 389,112 possible patterns. So I'm sure if you had a really strong processor and you hacked that you could pretty much brute force that. And of course, you think, oh, I'll brute force this and I'll take hours. And of course, the easy way around it is just have a look at the actual phone. The oils from your finger tend to be on the device itself. So the hacker can potentially, if he can get access to the phone, then that's pointless. This is quite interesting. I do a lot of Windows Azure and Office 365, and one of the features that Office 365 has, it's called multi-factor authentication. So, I go up to a website and I log in with my username and password, but because we've got multi-factor authentication on, it sends a text message with a code. I then have to put that code in and it grants me access. Now, this is for corporate users. So this particular app here is for Microsoft accounts. So if you've got a Windows phone or a mobile device, you can download this app and it provides the same thing. So you can use the app, it basically protects the phone. You can basically request a code, an additional code, so it provides two-factor authentication. This is very good. And that's a free app as well. So what are the other things that I can do? Well, you may think, well, what about cryptography then? So a few years ago, I spoke about cryptography. And I mentioned that there's cryptographic solutions, data at rest solution, and also data in transit. So there's data in transit with SSL. Of course, you can secure sockets, port 443, and so on. But there's also data at rest technologies. One of the problems with many cryptographic solutions with data at rest is it's a device. Because it's on all the time, information is stored in RAM. When you store information in RAM, a recovery key is potentially hackable, okay? But at least, you know, it's not perfect, but at least it's an additional layer of security that you can add in. So most smartphone vendors now provide you with cryptography. Can I just, we've got about 1,000 people in this room. Can I just have a show of hands? How many of you actually encrypt your phones? Wow, look at that. I would say probably that's about 4 to 5%. I proved my case, okay? So the technology is there. The security tools are there. Why don't you do it? What's the number one reason why we don't encrypt our phones? Anybody? Shout it out. Sorry?
Afraid you can't decrypt it.
Yeah. I'm afraid you can't decrypt it. Yeah, because that happened to me on a device once. And it's very annoying. Yes, you're afraid that you can't decrypt it or something goes wrong and you actually can't get into your data and you're forced to wipe it. And of course, that's the other thing. That's encryption's what number one flaw. You can wipe the device and it makes it completely useless. The ability to encrypt phones both internally, again, all phone vendors now have the capability to do this. So depending on the phone vendor, you can get anything from 128-bit encryption up to a 1024-bit encryption. It actually, if you've got a military device or what we call the black phone, it goes even higher than that, by the way. But as I say, like many data at rest technologies, they are potentially vulnerable to RAM attacks. So, for example, various forensics tools would be able to unlock these devices. Which takes me on to the subject of mobile forensics. So, with mobile forensics, we need to, first of all, understand the acronyms. So, unlike PCs, which I'm sure we all know, there are a number, you might have heard of GPS, you might have heard of IMSI or IMEI codes. You might know what SMS is. But if you want to specialize in forensics in this area, this is, again, there are no experts in this area. This is a technology, it's a fairly new area. And again, we need more people in this. So the first thing is we need to do is understand the acronyms. Again, I'm going to provide some additional white papers that will give you more details on this later. Sorry. Just have a quick drink. Okay. So when we think about what's on our PCs, we have to take that into context now onto phones. So in the old days, 15 years ago, the chances are you maybe just had a few contacts, you maybe had your phone, but nowadays, what have you got on there? You've got email, you've got notes, you've got contacts. You've got business email, you might have business apps, you might have photos, web history. I mean, this is your life potentially on here. Okay, you might have banking information. You might have ebooks, especially mine. Okay, so did I mention, but no. Mobile phone forensic challenges. So, of course, for a forensics person, a law enforcement officer, one of the biggest challenges at the moment is that I was reading the other day that two guys had been arrested for drugs. And what do the police do? They take their phones. And, of course, I'm allowed to a phone call. They phone their wives. Can you send that remote wipe code out, please? That's a problem, yes? So the remote wipe. How do you stop that? It's also a great for us if the phone is stolen, but it's not good for a police officer. So the key thing is many phones are secured by a simple PIN. Of course, if it's a four-digit PIN, you can pretty much just brute force that. Constant software changes. So from a security professional perspective, you have to keep up to date with all of these different versions. proprietary hardware and connectors. Now, if you want to go out and buy a full forensics kit complete with all the connectors, these are about $13,000. So it's all the different types of connectors so that you can do a snapshot of the phone. How do you deal with encrypted SD cards, encrypted storage? What about data volatility? So, of course, you know, if you switch off data, what was held in RAM is gone. So, again, what you know, the things that you can do in a live environment, you could take a virtual machine, a virtual snapshot of that, and then work on that offline. But in the phone world, it's a little bit more tricky. Oh, the other thing I meant to mention was other places to look, however. You might think, I won't get my phone, I've done a remote wipe. Of course, we've all got cloud backup storage, haven't we? Yes, we've all got backup storage which goes to local machines. So when we talk about phone forensics, the first thing I wanted to show you here, if I just go into... Oh, yeah, by the way, did I mention a book? right, let's just go in here. So last year I demoed this. So this is a password forensic. And you're probably thinking, okay, well, what's the point of that? I can go off, I can recover file passwords, internet network passwords. I can reset the administrator password. So as a forensics person, one of the first places I would not necessarily go is to your phone. I would typically go to your PC because the chances are you're going to have a pretty good backup there. All right? And again, if you've got a mobile device, of course, again, you might want to analyze the memory on your PC. So again, still PC forensics is still pretty good. The other thing that I wanted to mention here, if I just go into here, I wanted to show you, they actually have a version, mobile, password kit mobile, on... Unfortunately, when I clicked on this last night, I got this message. Okay, my license had expired. Would you believe that? It worked 2 days ago, but now my license has expired. But it's okay. It's okay. So what I've done is I've got this. It's the same company that produced this. This is called Oxygen Data. There's a data extraction tool. And Oxygen can extract data from all mobile phone vendors. Okay, so basically, obviously, you've got a memory blocker, so again, it doesn't damage the actual evidence, and you basically just rip the contents of that phone. And again, because this is part of the same suite, unfortunately, when I try to run it, I just get the error message, it's actually expired. But fortunately, I can do this demo, well, part of it anyway. Okay, yes, I know it's expired, but that's okay because I actually have already ripped the actual content. So it basically said, it looked at the phone and it determined that I had a Microsoft backup. So because I had a Microsoft backup and I already did a PC forensic study, I now have the username and password for the Microsoft account. So I basically just ripped the most recent backup of that phone. And as you can see, I basically got all the contacts from that phone. I can then say, okay, do you want to connect to the device? I could say, okay, let's do the connection. I can export this data. I can either export it to a file. With the new version, you can also export it to a virtual machine as well. The other thing that I was going to show you, yeah. So you can also import the backup file as well. So you can either import the image, and you can see it supports all major kind of images, major versions. So the key thing is, from a law enforcement perspective, I don't necessarily need access to the physical device. I need access to the actual data. And it's possible covertly that I can actually get access to the user's contacts, the user's data, without actually even touching his phone, so that he doesn't even know that I've actually got access to his phone. But you can see here, if I was law enforcement, I now know who these contacts are. This is everything that I need. Okay? Very, very useful tool. I was actually going to rip a phone, but unfortunately the license expired yesterday. So what are some of the from a forensics and a law enforcement perspective, what are some of the things that you can do? Well, first of all, you need to secure the device. So you need to prevent unauthorized access. You need to be able to prevent the bad guy from also doing a remote wipe on it as well. If the device is off, then definitely leave it off. Don't try and switch it on. If it's on, leave it on, and so on. However, one thing though, if it is on, definitely switch off the Wi-Fi capability. And of course, I'm not just talking about the phone here, I'm also talking about whether it could be an iPad, it could be a Windows device, whatever. Okay. I would tend to agree with that one, not to inform anybody that you've got the device either, because they may try and countermand what you're trying to do. And definitely collect as much evidence as actual possible. The one thing I would say, by the way, is if you're not a forensic investigator and you suspect somebody of being up to no good, you suspect that there's inappropriate content on that phone, inappropriate pictures, for example, the first thing that you must not do is you must not touch that device. Contact law enforcement, take legal advice. Because you could damage any potential evidence. So what are some of the things that we can do then to protect our personal devices? So when we talk about personal phones, what do I mean? Well, of course, always back up your phone and obviously make a secure backup. I would probably add that I would encrypt the backup, either that or store it on a BitLocker drive. Definitely get phone insurance. Actually get proof that it's yours. So make sure that you actually have a note of the IMEI number. This is really important for making claims. Definitely report it to police. Try not to store too much PII on the data, personally identifiable information. And I know that's really difficult, especially with the likes of social networks. Because remember, you've got access to a phone, you've got access to your life. Inform the service provider. This is a great website as well, missingphones.org as well. So what that does, that particular website informs all the vendors. So if somebody steals your phone and then tries to use it, you register the IMEI of the phone with missingphones.org, and then that avoids anybody stealing it or trying to use it again. Other things that you can do, Windows, of course. So this is the Find My Phone feature on Windows 8 and 8.1. So you can go in here, you can choose to, what do you want to do? So this is, you've got somebody's stolen your phone, you've lost your phone, you can go in online, and you can say, hey, I want to go and lock the phone, and you can ring the phone as well as you lock it. You can obviously, this is the message that the user will see on their screen. And then you can say, okay, what do you want me to do? Are you pretty sure that you've lost that phone? Well, of course, data is everything, my friends. So again, you might want to go ahead and wipe that phone clean. Now, you've also got the additional thing there as well of being able to delete the backups, so any backups of that. Now, again, this is great for you, not great for law enforcement. Okay, so if there's any bad guys in the room, then this is good for you. Find My Phone. Okay, so again, you can send apps using the push notifications, and again, you can save the phone's location. Likewise, if you've got an Apple device, of course we all have Apple devices, some of you maybe. Again, sign into iCloud, use the Find My Phone feature, and again it will assist you in locating your phone. That's a really nice feature. Likewise, Android has a number of different applications. Again, a lot of it's Google. That's one thing that Google is pretty good at, of course, is directions. And again, it can provide, this is just one example, of course. So other tips then for private users. Definitely use some kind of multi-factor authentication. If your phone and your data, especially smartphones, let's get into the habit of encrypting data on phones. Use a third-party device, secondary login mechanism if you can. Again, make sure that you also back up on your phones as well, of course. Use SSL, EAP, TLS, so especially useful if you're connecting to corporate email. Don't browse the internet with secure phones. So again, if you're a government employee or a military employee, you'll know all about that. This is interesting, by the way. There was some research in Virginia last year where a person had their mobile device beside their laptop. And there was actually an app. And what the app was doing, the tilt sensor on the phone could actually determine what keys you were typing on the keyboard. Okay, that was very interesting, and you could actually hack somebody's PC. So they may not be watching you, but you can actually determine what they're typing. Definitely, only download apps from approved sources and approved locations. And I know that's easy for me to say. So, looking at then at some of the business sides of protecting your mobile technologies. Well, there are sessions this week, actually. In fact, there's a session later on this afternoon about this. So Windows Azure, of course, mobile services, you know, we're all moving to the cloud. And one of the things about moving to the cloud is that we're using things like user authentication. And you can see user authentication federation is definitely the in thing, the flavor of the month. And so Windows Azure is now federating or user authenticating through a number of different third-party platforms. So again, you have to take that into account, especially if you're using mobile devices. So SCCM, of course, can help you as an enterprise organization. But if you've got, let's say you're a small business, you're a consultant, and you've got many different customers in many different locations, well, you can bring the benefits of the likes of SCCM with the likes of Windows Intune. So Windows Intune is a mobile, well, is a management platform. You can manage PCs, you can manage the updates, you can deploy software, you can also control it with policies. But one of the really cool features that this does is you can also do mobile device management as well, which is really quite exciting. And of course, the nice thing is it doesn't just manage Windows devices. It can manage not just Windows and Windows RT devices, but Windows phones, iOS, so Apple devices, and also the ever-expanding range of Android devices as well. So let me just give you a quick look then at Windows Intune. So as they used to say, here's one I made earlier. I was going to show you the video, but I'm going to do it for real. So this is my Windows Intune interface here. And what we've got here, I've just basically gone and created, oh, right, I need to log in again. It forgot my password. Okay, so I've got I've created some users here, and with those users, I'm a big Friends fan, by the way. I've just ungrouped them at the moment. So some of the things that you can do, obviously, you can send out software, you can deploy critical updates, you can deploy service packs, roll-ups, and so on to all your users and your customers. Other things that we've got, you can also manage endpoint protection, you know, malware and so on. You can set up alerts to notify. I can deploy software. You can manage things like licenses as well. So, you know, if you're working not just with Microsoft products, but you can add in third-party vendors, which makes it really interesting. The really cool feature, though, is that you can actually deploy a security policy, irrespective of where the user is or what type of device they're using. So to manage a user's phone, all you need to do is there is a little agent that you can download to the user's phone or the user's mobile device. So once you've downloaded that agent, we've then got access to the policies here. So, and again, I've just created this initial policy, and let's just have a quick look at it. So first up then, some of the things that we can do. You can say, hey, do I want to require a password on this device? And you can see, what device is it? It doesn't really matter. Minimum number of character sets to use, minimum password length to use. Again, this could all be part of your security policy here. What's the maximum? You know, are you going to allow simple passwords? Do you want something more, something more substantial? What are the number of repeated sign-in failures? What are the implications of a sign-in failure? What do you want me to do? After so many times, do you want me to auto-wipe the phone? Then you can things like password expiration policies. You can how many passwords do you want to remember? So this is all the kind of the stuff that you would be familiar with in an enterprise environment, but now being able to use for a remote environment. And remember, these people don't have to be part of your domain. These can be multiple customers, and you can group them accordingly. But this is definitely an exciting technology. Other things that we've got here, encryption. So we were talking about encryption. Do you require the users to encrypt the devices here? So again, yes or no. You can also, do you want to, set up a firewall? Don't allow the user to use a phone if there's no antivirus on it and so on. So there's a whole bunch of options here that you can actually use. So one of the other things, by the way, with the encryption, it's just yes or no, but you can also specify, do you want to require that the actual card is encrypted as well? So I'll say yes, I do want that. Do you require the network firewall is not configured? Then, yeah, I want to actually go ahead and do that. So again, I'm going to insist that there's a firewall. Do you want to enable smart screen? Then you've got a whole bunch of things on the system here, which talk about always making sure that the phone is up to date, making sure that it's patched and so on. And this is particularly important, of course, on a corporate network. So cloud, of course, if you're connecting to, for example, an Apple device that's connecting to iCloud, you might not want to put too many personal pictures of your girlfriend up there right now. Yes. Although I can sell you some, if you like. Are you going to allow photo streams? So again, you may not want to allow cloud backup, or you may want to manage it yourself. So you have these options here. So how do you want to manage things like documents and data? So again, are you using some kind of iCloud solution? Are you using Office 365? So the great thing about Intune is, as well, is it fully integrates into the likes of Office 365 there as well. Do you want to do a cloud backup? Things like email, specific applications. So you can say, okay, I only want this particular device to use these particular applications. So you can really make it as open as you like, or you can make it as granular and as secure as possible as well. All right. As I say, if there are a few Intune sessions this week, definitely go along and have a look at those. It's really quite interesting. But certainly for mobile device management or MDM, this is definitely an area that you want to take a look at. All right. Okay. So what I'm going to do is the other thing that I wanted to show you as well. I did a little demo
on the subject of Office 365, let me just close that down. Okay, so one of the nice things about Office 365, of course, is that you can manage all the user accounts. Again, you can manage multiple users and domains and so on. But in terms of, this is an interesting area, so things like external sharing. So certainly when users are coming in through remote devices, where they're coming in, you know, they're accessing, for example, OneDrive and OneDrive Pro, that's something you definitely want to control and definitely want to manage. And again, you, whether you're using some kind of remote management software for that, or whether you're using, for example, I don't know, a corporate network, the principles are pretty much the same thing. So take a look at Office 365. You've got the external sharing here. And again, tomorrow afternoon, I'm really going to talk about cloud security there. So what I'm going to do is, we do have a few extra minutes. So if my nice gentleman, the sound man, could maybe put up a microphone, we will maybe get a few questions from the audience. How about that? So there is a microphone across here, just in the middle there. If anybody has a question, would you like to go up and let's see what you've got to say.
There you go.
Yeah. Go for it.
Hi, Andy.
Hey.
I would like to hear something about Knox. I'm using Android 4.2 on the older version of Knox. Everyone wants to upgrade to 4.4 with the increased Knox security layer, increased NFC layer, and some other stuff. What do you say about Knox now that it has been government approved?
I would say if we can get... I think that's something you need to speak to the vendors. You need to get the vendors out there and get that pushed out. So I totally agree with that. Yeah, totally agree with that. Let's just have a quick show. Who uses Windows mobile phones? That's a stupid question at a Microsoft conference, yeah? Okay, who uses Android? Who uses Apple devices? Wow, that's the biggest. That's the biggest group here, yeah? So, you see what I mean? It's not just about the data. It's not just about the device anymore. It's actually about the data as well. Okay. Any other questions? No other questions?
Is the book available on Amazon?
Well, the book, you know, the book is available on Amazon. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Right? I've got a few books I'm going to give away this week. So I have some bookmarks. So if you come into my sessions, there will be a quiz, right? So if you've got a bookmark and you can answer the quiz, I'm going to... This is not just what I've got today. I've got more. I'll put them out. But you will be able to win one of those books. So just kind of help yourself afterwards. All right? There'll be a scramble afterwards. Okay. Okay. So tomorrow, it's all about the cloud. It's all about cloud security. We're talking Windows Azure. We're talking Office 365 security tomorrow. Then on Thursday is one of my favorite sessions, the dark web, the Tor network. And I'm sure that's a place that nobody in this room ever goes to, right? Because you guys are all very, very trustworthy, right? Okay. So, as I mentioned, I have a OneDrive link. So if you just sign up to my Twitter account there, I'll post that OneDrive link as we go. And also, I'm doing a meet and greet tomorrow. Downstairs. So if you want to come along, ask questions, come and meet me, you know, buy me a beer, that's no problem. You can tell I'm a Scot, right?
So that's there. I have three sessions here at Checkout this week. So Hacking Beyond Borders is that one. I've got A Game of Clouds and also The Dark Web Rises on Thursday. And I hope that you can come along for that. We have some Microsoft resources here, the usual stuff here. Please evaluate the session. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, it's great. If you haven't, then my name's Thomas Lee. Okay? I'm Andy Malone. Thank you very much. Okay? Thanks.